for an entire generation. People have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Klupp.
Hello, this is Dan Z, and welcome to show number 5 of Coffee with Kenobi, a brand new Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. With me is my good friend and co-host, Corey Klupp.
Hello, everybody. Things certainly have gone well for us at Coffee with Kenobi over the past 2 weeks. Our last episode, featuring Trisha Barr of Fangirl Blog and Mark Noble of Jedi News UK, was very popular. If you haven't heard it yet, feel free to download it and check it out on iTunes or from our official website. We had the good fortune of meeting new listeners through email, Facebook, and our Twitter feed. We also got over 200 likes on our Facebook page, so thank you to everyone for helping us out on that and spreading the word. Perhaps the coolest thing that happened was that Mike and Joe from the great Star Wars podcast, The Cantina Cast, had us on as guests. So be sure to check out episode 34 of The Cantina Cast and hear our great conversation about Obi-Wan Kenobi.
In today's show, we will discuss the Star Wars presence at San Diego Comic-Con, Celebration Europe 2 news, and discuss Celebration Anaheim. A lot of information came out through these events, as well as Clone Wars news, and we'll see what the future holds for the beloved TV series.
We'll also introduce our topic for show number 6. As well as discuss our topic for today, the Expanding Universe and canon. Fan of the show and Expanding Universe enthusiast, Kyan Royalty, will join us to share his opinions, as well as discuss our thoughts and emails on this topic. And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Oh wait, this is interesting.
You found something.
For our first news story, we're going to talk about Kathleen Kennedy's appearance at Celebration Europe 2. Now, we do know, of course, that this was a couple of weeks away at the time of this recording, but I'm sure you noticed some of our Skype issues with our interview with Ian Desher. But fortunately, we got them all worked out. The interview turned out really, really strong. We had a lot of positive feedback on that. So we thank all of our listeners for carrying through with that. So on to Kathleen Kennedy's appearance at Celebration Europe 2. And the main thing, Corey, I think, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, is she's talking about emphasizing story and characters. You know, those little things were not really present in Man of Steel and Pacific Rim and things like that over the summer. You know that I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, you agree with me now.
Well, that's a different debate, but I will say that that is a key topic as far as Star Wars universe goes. It's all about the characters, it's all about the story, and I'm really glad that they are grounding these new movies into this because that's what we've all, I don't want to say grown up with.
Well, we have grown up with it, and she talks about ILM having a great team that makes great effects, but if you don't have a great story and characters, the effects mean nothing. I'm sure all the prequel haters, or even people who are not necessarily prequel haters, but those that I look at them through a more critical lens, and I count myself as one of those people, that is good news. And did you catch what else she mentioned over at Celebration Europe 2?
I did notice, yeah. They talk about the special effects, like you said, that they'll be obviously using computers, but also some, you know, sure, some practical effects and, you know, natural things that they use in the original trilogy. You know, it's kind of the miniatures, the models, and things like that. And especially with technology now, I mean, yeah, it can do a lot of cool things too, but can't beat the classic stuff.
You can, and she's saying these buzzwords that made me very excited, like real locations, and like you mentioned, the models. And this, she says here, we are going to use every single tool in the toolbox to create the look of these movies. That's awesome. That's exactly what we're hoping that episode 7 is going to look like. That's got to be music to everybody's ears.
Dan, speaking of music to our ears, it's been officially announced that John Williams will be scoring episodes 7, 8, 9, which is great news. We had rumored about this earlier in a couple of our earlier shows. This is now confirmed. And how awesome is it to have him not only for just episode 7, but 8 and 9 as well?
Yeah, and they didn't mention the standalone films as far as his presence, which tells me that he's probably going to, quote, pass the baton, end quote, to someone else for that, maybe Michael Giacchino, or who knows. But having John Williams in 7, 8, 9, that's the dream. Our next story is about Star Wars Rebels, and it's for Star Wars Rebels fans. We got to see our first look at the Ghost, which may be the main character ship, and it's going to be a big part in the series. We saw some cute computer renderings of a very McCoy-esque stormtrooper, the interior of a Star Destroyer, the whole thing. It was very cool. There was a thing where you could click a link and order the logo as a t-shirt, and Corey and I are proud owners of those shirts. Hopefully they'll be coming in the mail pretty soon. Corey, what do you think about the ship? Because I got to be honest, people were going crazy over it, and I was kind of like, eh.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I mean, my first instinct was Millennium Falcon, duh. I mean, it looks just like it. The cockpit looks, you know, it's hanging low, and the turrets are all kind of looking the same. Obviously, I like it because it is kind of a throwback to Macquarie's, design. It looks like his stuff. I like it because it does look back the stuff you might see just before the pre-era of, you know, the original trilogy. So I think it looks good, but yeah, it is just a ship, and it might be a big part of the show. It might not be, so we don't know yet.
I'm not sure about that either. I thought they made a big deal about that was the main ship, but then, and of course we noticed, and I'm just going to quote right from the article itself. I didn't come up with this, but they say the show's logo is a minimalist yet powerful design noticeable for its orange and black color scheme, which recalls the flight suits of Rebel pilots in the original Star Wars trilogy. I didn't notice the color thing, and they're very excited, but I think that just shows that us as fans, we're starving for real news. We were very excited. And, you know, feel free to disagree with me. Like, I'm sure the ship is cool. I'm sure I'll buy the toy of it or something like that. But I'm looking forward to more news that's actually more substantial.
Rebel scum. For our next story, we obviously are very excited about the official announcement of Star Wars Celebration 2015. It's in Anaheim, California, running from April 16th to April 19th, 2015. And we're ecstatic. We're very excited because we've got our tickets.
Yeah, Corey, they went on sale August 7th yesterday, and I had the good fortune. I'm on baby duty this week, and it's been a great time, but that gave me the ability to try to chime in here. I opened up my iPhone and the laptop, just waited in the virtual queue. It took me about 12 minutes. It's going to be a great celebration because it's going to be the same number as Episode 7, and I think that's cool because the only other one I went to was Celebration 3, and that was when Episode 3 came out. So I like the synergy of that, if you will.
Well, also, Dan, they announced that they were kind of doing away with the number theme and just calling it Celebration Anaheim.
Why are people so upset about losing
that? I don't know. It's okay.
Once we get past 20, no one's going to know what the heck it is anyway.
Oh, they will.
Melinda will know. She'll tell us. I know 5 because Shakespeare has 5 acts, but that's it. I mean, I like the old school nostalgia feel, but I also like the fact that it's going to have a destination marker. It just kind of feels strong.
Well, I think also, too, they're going for more locations, so obviously maybe they're going to, you know, do it every year now, besides doing it every 2 years, and maybe they'll, you know, do it in different locations, Chicago, New York, Miami, I think it'll be a great thing to do.
I hope it goes back to Orlando because you've got Disney World right there, and that's where some of my roots are. That'd be cool. And it's great. I can't believe we have to wait almost two years for it. I mean, I'm sure a lot of fun things will happen in the meantime, but it's great. And I think what gets me is that hotels are being swapped up already, and people are finding.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to find deals. Well, it's hard to find deals because the $130 a night one is taken out. The Anaheim, what is it, the Marriott? I think that one's been booked. So it's going to be cool.
I mean, we're talking, what, a year and a half in advance, and that's a huge...
That's a big commitment, and I know a lot of people are upset about how early the tickets were on sale, too. I think a lot of the celebrations have been fairly similar. This might be the earliest one, but not by much. And I know also people are concerned about how big the convention center size is. That's where the D23 Expo is going to be this weekend. My brother-in-law lives in California. He said it's plenty big. And I think, I mean, people just need to... This is great. This is, again, why do some Star Wars fans just want to complain about this? This is awesome. Since we recorded our last 4 news stories, the D23 Expo has come and gone, and I will be the first to admit I have been saying for over a month that I thought the D23 Expo, we were going to get news about the theme parks. I thought possibly it was about a 60% chance, 70% chance that the big three would come out and say, hey, we're going to be in the show, and, you know, everyone stage dive and all kinds of stuff. But that didn't happen. There was no D23 news of any kind. This has caused a huge uproar in fandom on Twitter, on Facebook, all over the place. What are your feelings on this lack of news and how it was all handled by Lucasfilm and Disney?
I agree, Dan. It was kind of a bummer not to hear anything. You know, they didn't even give us like a teaser poster or, you know, just kind of confirm some things that rumors have been out there that just, hey, you know, yeah, we're going to have the big three, like you said, and, you know, we're going to have, you know, just some of the classic stuff that, you know, we want to hear. But on the flip side, there has been some folks saying, you know, how much do you really want to learn 2 years out? You know, granted, we don't want to know, we don't know everything.
So. And what's going to happen is it'll come out and we'll say, oh, it's news, but it's not news, just like the John Williams thing. But
right.
People are still going to be happy with it. And I'm kind of on two minds on this.
Sure.
That Disney and Lucasfilm don't owe us anything. They're giving us at least five new Star Wars movies. Those experiences in the theater, the build up, the hype, the trailers, the posters, that is great. I don't think they owe us anything. I'd have liked to have heard something. It's still a little bit early, and I don't want us to get tired of it. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't want everybody to get tired of it and be oversaturated with it before anything has even happened yet. It was smart. They know what they're doing. They know how to market films. The Avengers, all we have so far is a title. It would be nice to have a title. There are a lot of articles out there. We'll probably put one in our show notes about the history of these titles and when they are released for the Star Wars films. That being said, here's the one thing I take umbrage with, and that is Orange Harvest. Obviously, fans of this podcast know Blue Harvest was the original working title of Return of the Jedi. It was the code name so that people wouldn't come and crash the set and try to figure out what was going on. It was called Horror Beyond Imagine. So the Imagineers, the Disney Imagineers, the people who create and design these rides and attractions for Walt Disney World and Disneyland, they had all these orange crates, and we put a video on our Facebook feed where there was an Imagineer being interviewed, and all these crates said Orange Harvest, Speculation Beyond Imagination. And one of the boxes had a silhouette of an R2 unit coming out, and one crate had all these different lightsabers and lightsaber colors. And they were setting us up saying, something exciting is happening. Well, this is the D23 Expo. It happens every 3 years. It's a big deal. Angelina Jolie was there, Natalie Portman was there. All these different celebrities were there. I really thought we were going to get some sort of an inkling about Star Wars theme park news, and we didn't get that. I'm a big Disney apologist, but it would have been nice if they're going to build our hopes up like that, not to continually string us along. Just flat out say, like Pablo Hidalgo said in his background on Star Wars for Star Wars beginners, he said, we're not going to have Episode 7 news. A bunch of people got up and left the auditorium, if you will. That's fine. At least he told us. But Disney kind of teased us along that there was going to be news, and we didn't get anything. That kind of was disappointing to me.
This is such a big fan base. You're playing with fire a little bit, if you know what I mean. And you know, if you're going to be kind of trickling little breadcrumbs at us and saying, oh, there might be something, and all of a sudden you don't give us anything, people are going to start getting upset.
Everyone on Twitter, even like Star Wars celebrities were coming on saying, ooh, Orange Harvest, what could that be? Like, they're feeding the fire too. And Star Wars fans get very excited about stuff, and obviously we're fanatics. We're like sports fans as far as our fandom goes. We really are intense and passionate about what we love. And I don't blame them, but it's not going to make a bit of difference as far as theme park attendance or cinema attendance.
Sure.
I would have liked to have seen something. Just a hint. So as far as this idea about Ian McDiarmid possibly coming back, we posted an official statement on our Facebook page about it, but I know you have some pretty strong feelings about this as well. So what do you think about that possibility?
The possibility is interesting to me. I think he's a great actor. He's well received. Everybody loves him as the Emperor.
He's terrific, yeah. He could have easily got an Oscar now for Revenge of the Sith.
Absolutely. Him coming back in that capacity, if that's the case, if he's going to go into Episode 7 and onward, and him being the main villain, that's everybody's kind of looking at that as being, you know, that could possibly be a storyline. I think that it's kind of a easy grab, if you will, as a villain. Just, you know, yeah, they're carrying his character all the way through the saga itself. But I think to do that and make that the villain, it's kind of like it's been done. Let's have something new here, let's have something fresh. Because I know, like you said, the big three are going to be in it, obviously, to some capacity. I don't think they're going to be as big as we think they're going to be. They might have cameos, whatnot, here and there. I think they're really going to try and focus on new characters and new storylines in these new films.
Difficult to see the future is, and I agree with you, it's a bit, I don't want to say it's lazy, but it's, like you said, it's been done. I mean, if he comes out, I'll be excited, it'll be fine. But let's just have some new ideas. One of the main problems in Hollywood, Pacific Rim, is that there are so many things that are so trite. We've seen all this before. If I want to see the Emperor again, I'll watch the original trilogy. I'll watch the prequel trilogy. Let's have something new and exciting. I mean, again, this is all rumor, and shame on us for even addressing this stuff, but it's on people's mind. But let's just say that we have faith in J.J. Abrams and Michael Art and Star Wars as a franchise, and we'll trust that they're going to do the best job that they can do.
You know, obviously when the Batman movies were being made, the Dark Knight movies with Christopher Nolan at the helm, I know when they had Liam Neeson come back in the third movie, Dark Knight Rises, everybody's up in arms saying, oh, he's the villain, oh, he's the, you know, like secret villain. And come to see, it was really not. He was just more of a flashback, you know, dream sequence. So it was, you know, thrown out there saying, oh, he's going to be the villain. Everybody thought, oh, he would, you know, come back. Where if they did something like that with Ian McDermott, I think that'd be fine. I think I'd really enjoy that. I'd love to see him on screen again.
That would be cool. Or if they were actually going to do one of the spin-off movies as Dark Plagueis, that would be amazing.
That's what I was going with. If they did a separate film, Darth Plagueis, oh man, I think that'd be excellent. I think it'd be a great way to do it.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard, each sold separately. From Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
For our collector news, we finally get the announcement that Clone Wars Season 5 is coming out. It's going to come out on October 15, 2013. On Blu-ray for 2-disc set. It's going to have a regular DVD set. It's going to have all 20 episodes, some director's cuts, a bunch of supplements, behind-the-scenes stuff, we all know this isn't news either, but no announcement of the special bonus content. We don't know what in the heck is going on with that. They even sounded like they were going to... They're still debating not only how to release it, but we might even get some episodes with unfinished animation. And some people think that's cool. I guess it's cool. I don't really want to read all the bonus stuff like in a comic or a book. That's fine. But I really want... Why can't they just put the money into it? I mean, seriously.
Obviously, they're going to do, you know, put Season 5 together, and obviously going to put it, you know, Seasons 1 through 5 together just to wrap everything up, I think, in a sense. But also, I think they're going to really budget their time, budget their money, and put it into the new series, the Rebels series, and really look forward to that. I think trying to just make a cutoff point and they're trying to just add everything they can into it, whether it will be, you know, like small little clips of unaired, you know, episodes of Season 6 or not. It'd be great, I think. It'd be cool to see like where they could have taken it or what they were going to plan on doing, but you know, who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
And you mentioned that they're going to have the box set come out also on the 15th. It's also going to have a 54 brand new page Art of the Clone Wars booklet that you can only get through the box set. I was going to wait until the box set went around Season 2 was out, but then I just couldn't handle it, so I've been buying each one on Blu-ray. I'm going to do that here too. I don't even know if I'm going to get the box set. Probably what I'll do is, like you said, eventually if they have a ginormous collector's super duper extravaganza, Star Wars a Palooza, Clone Wars doop-de-doo, then I'll get that. That would be fine. Then I don't know if you heard the last Force cast, but they talked about it on that. And also, if you read on the Star Wars blog, they kind of did a play-by-play of the... But did you hear some of the cool things that they have scheduled for Season 6?
No.
Well, one of the things they're going to do is Yoda's going to go to the Sith Temple. And that's probably tied into that clip we saw from Star Wars Weekends where Anakin helped Yoda get out of his confinement, so to speak. What else did they have?
Well, they had that Plo Koon little clip. Didn't he find
Order 66, yeah.
Yeah, he found his lightsaber on some deserted ship or something.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty cool. So there's a lot of other things, too. Check out the Force cast for that. Check out the Star Wars blog with the play-by-play of Filoni's thing. So, good news, Clone Wars fans.
Our next collector's news item is about San Diego Comic-Con, which was a couple weeks ago. There was a big hubbub about that. Although we had our friend Troy go and kind of report for us, we got a clip for you guys. I'm going to play that now.
Hey, everybody. This is Dark T-Bone reporting for Coffee with Kenobi, the podcast you've been looking for. I am here at Comic-Con 2013 in the middle of the Star Wars Plaza. asked to do a little on-spot report, see if anything piqued my interest that might be good for everybody out there. So standing here, honestly, not a lot, too much new stuff going out. They're holding everything for the Disney D23 convention. So everything here is kind of just waiting. As far as collectibles go, Hasbro, all they have is a few examples of some of the new Black Line figures that are coming out. Also, the 4-inch line will be continuing. Those are going to be for retail of about $10, and the Black Line are $20. I think that the biggest thing here at Comic-Con this year was the Petco display. Petco is going to start carrying a pet Star Wars-themed pet toys and ears, sweaters, leashes, collars, squeakies. They've got cat toys, dog toys. Might even fit your chinchilla or guinea pig if they're small enough. Who knows? We've also got fan wraps here, which are like car decals that can be placed on your car. Looks pretty cool. They've got various sizes all the way up to extra large. They've got a smart car here that looks like an Imperial Star Destroyer. It's got more Stormtroopers and Vaders on it than I could even count. Furry Universe has a lot of new stuff coming out, plenty of new shirts. I think everybody's just really waiting for the whole Disney and Star Wars thing to really just settle down so they can really start seeing some new stuff that's going to be coming out and have something to really get excited about. So for that now, I hope everybody has a great time with Star Wars over the next coming years. There are some new pajamas out there and some sunglasses, so keep your eyes out. Other than that, may the Force be with you all.
It's cool, and thanks again to Troy Metzler for being our official San Diego Comic-Con correspondent. The news he had was interesting. I know that they had a heck of a time with the Hasbro line trying to get those 6-inch Boba Fett, Han Solo, and Carbonite Black Series figures.
And speaking of the Black Series, Dan, you mentioned those just came out. The first wave just came out, and I know you picked those up, the first four. Tell us a little bit about that. Give us a little mini-review of what the Black Series looks like.
I can give you two words to describe it. Awesome and angst.
Awesome, because, awesome and angst?
Yes, awesome because the detail is incredible. I mean, they are incredible. They look like little statues. They're phenomenal. The angst for me is I am the kind of collector who doesn't open his figures. And once in a while, I'll buy two. And then you know what happens when I open them? I have them out. They don't think they look as cool. I can never get them to pose right. They're falling all over the place. I lose the weapons. 6 months later, I don't know. Is that the Stormtroopers? Is that Greedos? I mean, actually, I do know the difference.
You should know.
I do. Oh, I do. But I don't like having to keep track of that stuff. But the Black Series, it's like the Star Wars gods are smiling on the collectors. Because you can open it from the bottom. You can open the box, slide out the plastic that holds it in place. You can take out the figures, pose them, play with them, put them back in, and then push them back in the box. And it's sealed. You would never know that you sold it.
But you've got a problem, Dan.
What's the problem?
Fingerprints.
Well, that's true. But again, like, dude, I'm not going to sell them. I'll never sell them. I just like how they display in boxes. So now I have the boxes come in when I do my little rotation in my future Star Wars Coffee with Kenobi office. But I can look at them. And the R2-D2 is the finest looking one. It's got all the attachments that you can store inside of his dome. Darth Maul looks way better than I expected. It's got the head with just without the hood, the head with the hood. He looks great. Luke looks nice. It's the X-Wing one. It looks pretty cool. My favorite one is the Sandtrooper. It looks phenomenal. There's a little dusting on the armor. It's just an incredible sculpt. The Black Series 6-inch figures are a must, and they look great. So Wave 2 is already for pre-order. It has Greedo, Han Solo, Boba Fett, and Slave Leia. The Slave Leia sculpt doesn't look as cool, but it's because they have her knee bent, and you can tell she's an action figure. But 6-inch Black Series, way to go. Our next collectible story has to do with the Gentle Giant 12-inch Kenner figures. San Diego Comic-Con did do something pretty cool as far as some of their announcements. They have all these cool things coming out with Hoth. The Sideshow has a Hoth collection. There's a 12-inch Kenner Han Solo Hoth figure. And we talked about this last show. I haven't ordered any yet because I want to find the perfect figure. If I'm going to spend, somewhere between $60 and $80 on a vintage Kenner 12-inch figure that's reminiscent of the 3 3/4 quarter line, I'm going to get something awesome. I think I'm going to wait for the Luke Hoth one maybe, or the Jedi Luke. I don't know, but these things, if anyone gets these things, if you could send us in an MP3 review, talk about it. I love to know how they look because they are awesome. And did you see, I mentioned the Hoth collection. Did you check that out, Corey?
I did. It looks good. Like you said, well, on the Han Solo figure, the 12-inch, to me, I'm not, it looks like just a blown up, you know, minifigure from the 70s to me. I mean, and his legs are all stiff, and you know, I mean, who wants a 12-inch Han Solo Hoth?
Dude, nostalgia. Well, you're not the.
Yeah, but if you're going for nostalgia, I think you should go back and get the 70s one, the one that originally came out. That's nostalgia. This is just an update and just a money grab. So,
true.
That's my thought on it. So,
okay. Well, I wish you wouldn't pull any punches and just tell us how you felt. Because I'm a sucker for this stuff, man.
I hate the 70s. That's what I'm going to say. No.
Well, so the sideshow thing, they have a Han and a Luke, both on Tauntauns. I'm hoping. I don't know yet. Maybe someone else does. I'm hoping they sell the Tauntaun separately. I love those 1/6 scale or whatever sizes. I have an Indiana Jones one. It's one of the prizes of my collection. It's phenomenal. It's just like Harrison Ford when it was in water too long and shrunk down because it's just him. And the probe droid, I'm drooling over that thing. I definitely want to get that one. So that's going to be cool. And then you can come over and look at it and realize, hey, you know what? It is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I do remember the Tauntaun where you could, like, jam him into the Tauntaun. It was like a little leather,
or not.
It was like rubber little opening. Yeah. And you could jam him inside there, and his legs would get stuck, and he'll sit sideways and won't look right. And
And then they had the one where you could cut the belly open and stick the figure out.
Yeah,
that was great.
See, that's nostalgia.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Our topic for show number 5 is the expanded universe and canon. Are you an expanded universe person? Why or why not? What about canon in general? How important is it? Why is it important? And really, should it be important? Joining us on today's show is our expanded universe fan and friend of the show, Kyan Royalty. Kyan is a voracious reader of the expanded universe and has graciously agreed to grab a cup of coffee with us and share his insights. Welcome, Kyan.
Hi, thanks for having me on tonight.
Absolutely. Well, for our listeners, Kyan is a former student of mine in British literature. We have a lot of those who are fans of our show, and I always enjoyed Kyan's insights into the different books and discussions that we had on literature and mythology. So I also know that Kyan is a big Star Wars guy, and he's read a lot of Expanded Universe books. So this seemed like a really natural fit, and we do, Corey and I really want to concentrate on having all kinds of different guests. We thought it was really cool. We want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to do that. So Kyan is our first guinea pig, if you will.
That's fine.
Thanks.
All right, guys.
He's like, thanks.
Yeah. Before we get into this, I want to Corey and I both have this book, Star Wars, The Essential Reader's Companion by Pablo Hidalgo. It's on the introduction, page 9. And it talks about canon and continuity. Pablo Hidalgo, for those of you who do not know, works for Lucasfilm. He's a Star Wars encyclopedia, has written many books on Star Wars, and he's the guy to ask about all things of Star Wars nature. And here's what he says about it. The most definitive canon of the Star Wars universe is encompassed by the feature films and television productions in which George Lucas is directly involved. The movies in the Clone Wars television series are what he and his handpicked writers reference in adding cinematic adventures to the Star Wars oeuvre. And then he goes on. But Lucas allows for an expanded universe that exists parallel to the one he directly oversees. In many cases, the stewards of the expanded universe, editors within the licensing division of Lucasfilm Limited, who work with authors and publishers, will ask for his input or blessing on projects. Though these stories may get his stamp of approval, they don't enter into his canon unless they are depicted cinematically in one of his projects. That said, unless something occurs in a canon project to directly contradict a published source, it can reliably be said to have occurred. Okay, so basically, if we could spark notes that for everybody, what that means is that canon means something that George Lucas, who created the Star Wars universe, he said, this is what happened in my world in the Star Wars universe. That's what goes. And that includes all 6 movies, the future 3 that are coming up, and the Clone Wars animated series, plus the Ewoks. Apparently even that Ewoks, those 2 Ewoks TV shows are canon as well.
How about the Christmas special?
The Christmas special. I knew you were going to say that. I'm going to guess that's not canon since they won't even release that for people to watch. I do have a bootleg copy of it if you ever want to see it, but I don't think that's canon.
All right.
Now, canon is an important thing to understand because it means that's what happened. That's what really happened with these characters. Then the expanded universe comes in, and there's a bunch of other stories that come into play in between the films, and they're not canon, or are they? What do you think, guys? This is it's a topic that a lot of people have a hard time with.
Personally, I kind of view it as not really canon per se, but I don't really view it as stuff that didn't happen to the characters or in the universe either. Is if I read a book or watch a TV show or whatever, if it was officially published by somebody, then personally I view it as something that has a very good chance of it actually happened to the person, it actually took place. Now, on the other hand, if I'm reading like some random story that somebody put on a blog somewhere on the internet, I'm not going to consider that canon by far. So that's kind of my overall opinion of it.
I'm kind of borderline on that too. I think I'm more of the type I like to pick and choose what I deem as canon. I know both Dan and I, and I know Kyan's working on the Darth Plagueis book. We both really enjoyed that. I think I would consider that canon in respect to possibly the Sith background and obviously the draw up to Episode 1. But also, I mean, reading some of the other books, some are good, some are okay. You know, it's just like, I think any fan can kind of pick and choose what they want to do as far as I'm concerned. And that's what I've done. I go and read the books because I like a certain character or I like a certain era or something like that. I think that's great to have that kind of stuff. Because I think, like we said before, there's two different kind of, well, the way I see it, there's two different worlds. So there's the film world and there's also, like, you know, the EU world. And so, like, just like with comic books, we take that source material and kind of just build off it. And maybe a different way. Somebody's got a different vision and some different way of seeing things. Or possibly a character might do something a little differently or characteristics might be a little different. But I think that's okay. I think it's nice to see other people's point of view or basically storyline and where it may be headed. And like Kyan said, if it's not officially released by Lucasfilm or, Del Rey Books, I would consider it, you know, just more of like a fanfic type thing.
But that's the thing. Pablo Hidalgo, who works for Lucasfilm, specifically says the movies in the Clone Wars television series are what he and his handbook writers reference when adding cinematic adventure to the Star Wars oeuvre. So in other words, when they make newer films, they're going to reference them, continuity for the sake of story and adding to the depth and breadth of these characters in these worlds, had to come from the movies or the Clone Wars. Otherwise, it didn't really happen. So you can like Darth Plagueis, you can like any of these other books, and that's great. You should like them. I like them too. But it doesn't mean if it contradicts something in the movies, it's erroneous because it didn't really happen. Now, some people don't care about this. Now, for me, I'm a comic book guy. I know Corey is too. Kyan, do you read comics at all?
Not much, but a little bit.
Okay. Well, for me, like, when characters, like, if Peter Parker does something in a comic book, I want to know that that actually matters, what he says, what he does, what he thinks, characterization. I want to know that that carries over later. Otherwise, why should I be invested in a story if it didn't really happen? Now, I grant you this is all fiction, but in the world of fiction, you have to have some sort of connectivity to invest in these characters. And that's what canon is, really. You guys are talking about picking and choosing. You can pick and choose and enjoy the stories all you want, but that doesn't mean that it's officially how George Lucas sees his characters. And should that matter?
I think it should matter. I agree with you, Dan. I see what you're coming from, but I think it's difficult, you know, to make, you know, 7, 8, 9 and not somehow, some way, reference the EU in some sense. So, if, like we have said, if somebody has a child, it may possibly be, you know, son of Luke, son of Han, and Leia, and do you just not look at the EU stuff and just say like it's never been done and just kind of go your own way?
Well, that's the thing. What you're talking about is what Delroy's not coming out and saying. Ever since Disney took over, there were a lot of rumblings about they may reboot the EU, they may do away with the EU. They're not sure how they want to handle it. Disney doesn't want to be shackled by other people's opinions of character because the expanded universe clearly has a huge following. The books are always on the New York Times bestseller list, always high on the Amazon list of bestsellers, and they love them. We reread them. In fact, even though I haven't always been the biggest flag waver of the expanded universe, it's because I get so hung up in canon. I still read it because it's still Star Wars. That being said, if Darth Vader's going around in one of the books on roller skates, sorry, that's not the kind of character that he is, so that's a stretch. And I know for a fact that George Lucas and Pablo and a bunch of and Leland Chee, he's known as a Holocron guy, they help to say and guide some of these writers and editors into what these characters would do and not do. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy it, but the thing that gets me is when people take the expanded universe as quote-unquote gospel, per se. The only thing gospel about Star Wars is what George Lucas designed. Now, later I'm going to throw a wrinkle into this just to mess with your guys' heads, because that's fun to do.
Well, looking at some of these emails, Dan, that we've gotten some of our fans, again, we have some great fans that really are some smart emails and just really love their Star Wars universe and their EU. And they got some great opinions. If you don't mind, I'm going to read something real quick here from Melinda Wolf. She went on to talk about the X-Wing series, some of the other series that she's really, really in love with.
Very popular. Have you guys read the X-Wing series?
I've read a couple of them.
Have you really? I have not read a single word of them. Not. It wasn't a conscious decision, but I've never gotten around to it. Something tells me I'd really like them.
I actually haven't read any of them either yet. I will eventually. I actually only have a couple of them at this time, but once I get a few more, I'm definitely going to get into that.
Awesome.
But like I was saying, Melinda touches on a little bit about how she kind of relates the EU kind of with kind of a action figure perspective a little bit. If you're buying an action figure of Luke Skywalker, does he have to look like Mark Hamill? You know, it's kind of, I don't know, it's a hard ground to move on because, you know, you say Luke Skywalker and you think Mark Hamill right away. And maybe if you just read the books, you've got your own image in your own mind of what he looks like. And I don't know, it's like I said before, it's kind of like somebody else's take on the character. And should we consider it as canon? Again, that's a hard line to kind of balance on. And
but I don't even know why it is, just to keep playing devil's advocate, because Pablo Hidalgo tells you in a book published by Del Rey, Ballantine Books, that it's not.
Okay, but then
enjoy it.
Right, but I'm just okay. Then why are they coming out with books that are not canon? Then, you know, why
because it makes money.
Oh well, there you go.
And it's a lot, and it's a lot of fun. It's very entertaining. And the best example is Batman. You've got the DC Comics Batman. The series has been rebooted a number of times. The New 52 is the latest. Crisis on Infinite Earths rebooted majorly in the mid 80s, 85, I believe. So you've got those different incarnations of the character, but the comic is the only thing that's canon. You've got the 60s Adam West TV series, not canon, but people love it. You've got the Michael Keaton films. You've got, famously, the Christian Bale films. You've got Bruce Timm's and Paul Dini's Batman the Animated Series. These are all different versions of the same character. It doesn't mean that you can pick and choose whichever one that you enjoy. Maybe you have one you have a certain proclivity towards, but the actual canon that where you can safely say, no, Batman would do this or that, has to be based on the comic book. Just like with Star Wars, Luke Skywalker may do a certain thing in the expanded universe, but if he didn't do it or seemed to do something similar to that in the movies, then really, Luke Skywalker wouldn't do it.
So you're kind of shut off to the idea if Luke, I mean, I don't want to say, but like, you know, so if someone expanded on a certain scene that was in the film, you just kind of turn yourself off to it? Is that what you do?
No, I just...
I'm just saying, go ahead.
I just enjoy it. I think, oh, that's a possible interpretation. And I think that's it. It's a possible interpretation. It's gray. It may not be set in stone. And the best thing about Star Wars is that there are certain gaps in the movies that you get to fill in your imagination. We don't actually see how they hunt down and find Han Solo on Tatooine and Lando infiltrates Jabba's palace, or how Leia becomes Boosh, or any of that stuff. You have to use your own imagination. The expanded universe addresses it, and it's a fun possible interpretation. But canon means, no, those are nice things. Those are awesome. And they could be canon. That's the thing. Stuff that's the expanded universe may be canon someday. It could have happened. If you want that to happen, that's great. However, if it didn't happen in the movies, that's not the way that it is. And it is worth mentioning that I mentioned this before for Hidalgo, but he says, unless something occurs in a canon project to directly contradict a published source, it can reliably be said to have occurred. So he's saying that this stuff did happen or could have happened, but it's still not canon. So it's almost like you have a little asterisk by it. Maybe it's like hitting a home run and being on steroids. And it doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. No one is saying the expanded universe is worthless. It's not. Corey and I are reviewers of the expanded universe. We get books months before they come out and review them and write about them. We really like the expanded universe in Star Wars. The only thing is that you take it, you enjoy it, but it's not canon.
Okay, so Dan, let me just going back to that, like you said, you know, the time between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, they're going to go in into Jabba's palace and save Han. There's those deleted scenes that were on the recent Blu-ray releases. We got Luke building a lightsaber, and some action figures come out not too long ago, kind of depicting those scenes.
The sandstorm.
So like, is that let's just say that someone had written a scene just before they go in the Jabba's palace of Luke building a lightsaber. So if he crosses a red wire with a blue wire in the books, and then crosses a yellow wire with a black wire in the movies, you're going with the movies.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pedantic, but yeah, not only am I going with movies, but so is Lucasfilm. Yeah, the movie trumps everything. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy it and take it from a certain point of view, but it's not, you still have to, when it comes down to it, basically it's this. If you're having a debate about characters or vehicles or worlds, the movies trump everything.
Kind, any thoughts?
You know, personally, I do kind of agree with you that the movies are the top dog canon. That is what is absolutely canon. But on the other hand, I do kind of hold the EU a little kind of on the same plane as the movies. Maybe that's just because I love it so much.
And that's good. You're allowed to. That's good.
Yeah. So I look at the movies. I watch them. I love them. Read the book. Play the video games, et cetera, et cetera. Do that. Love it. You know, in the future movies, if there's clashes between what I've read and what I see, then yeah, I'm going to go with the movies, but I still hold the EU kind of on an equal plane with the movies myself.
Well, and Jaina and Jason are prime examples of that. People love them. People love them. If they're not in the movies, I think a lot of Expanded Universe people are going to be upset.
I agree. I do. Because, you know, they had an entire series of what, like 13 books that featured those characters?
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden the new movies come out and they don't exist.
New Jedi Order and all that.
Yeah. I mean, if that screws up everything that was in the books, then yeah, people are going to be mad.
And I can certainly understand that. Let's just put our cards on the table. I can't even think of the book title right now. But in the Expanded Universe, when Chewbacca died, I was so
Prime.
Yeah, Vector Prime. I was so ticked off. I said, nope, I'm never reading Expanded Universe novel again. And I did it for like 10 years. Close-minded, possibly. I also quit collecting comics when Batman broke Bane's back or when Spider-Man was a clone. If they venture that far off.
So there you go, Dan. I mean, like you said, you so many pinnacle things happen in our beloved series, Batman, Spider-Man. I mean, over the years and years and years, people love it or they hate it. The Clone series with Spider-Man was a big bust for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, also, like you said, though, you just threw it away. You're like, you're done. I'm done with this. This is ridiculous. But at that time, there was nothing else coming out to trump that. So what else are you to do as far as if we're not getting any more movies? Obviously, you know, we are now, but like, it's been a good – how long has it been since the episode 3?
2005.
So what, almost 10 years? 10 years of no films. We have a Clone Wars series. But even then, Clone Wars is going back and, you know, filling in the gaps type thing.
Which Lucas helps to make.
Oh, sure. I don't discount that. I'm just saying, like, you know, so the only thing that Lucasfilm had to go on was the books, the comic books. You know, even the action figure lines, they were putting out stuff. There was video games that were coming out. People are loving the stuff, eating up and loving it because they love the stories, they love the characters. There's something new to grasp onto and kind of, you know, enjoy.
They ate it like donuts on a Sunday morning. And you know what? And that's good. That's all very good. I want to point out something else in Melinda's email because she would probably disagree with me a little bit. She says, in closing, I'd just like to add that adhering strictly to any dogma can leave one short-sighted, even close-minded. That really is not what Star Wars is about. That isn't to say one couldn't prefer one over the other. I find the EU enhances one's enjoyment of Star Wars. The characters and events are just as rich as those created for the movies. And what's not to love about getting lost in a book, being transported to a galaxy far, far away, and letting your imagination take flight? Well, that's pretty good. I have no fault with Melinda's logic there. It does add to my enjoyment of the films.
I think she hit it right on the head there. You know, we can sit here and debate all night about what's canon and what's not canon, but when it comes down to it, they both exist, and You know, you like what you like.
Well, too, again, you mentioned the DC 52 series, Dan, and how they rebooted everything. I mean, they basically started from scratch. And a lot of people were like, what the heck? You know, this is ridiculous. As a fan myself, I was kind of excited. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I can, as a jumping on point for people who don't read comic books or want to get into something new and try something new. And it was kind of a nice thing. So, you know, let's just, what if they were to reboot the EU? Would that bother any of you guys?
It wouldn't bother me. Well, some things I don't, I mean, when they rebooted the new 52, they changed everything except for Green Lantern and Batman because those sold the best and they also had the most strong of a fan base. So they could pick and choose and say, we're going to reboot everything after Return of the Jedi. They probably would after the Zahn trilogy, I'm sure. But everything else is fine. I could see them doing something like that.
I think so much is in the EU right now. If they did a total reboot, that would be a very dramatic change. Like, you would go from all this stuff that you have and have gotten familiar with to absolutely nothing. It's completely brand new. You know, I don't know how well I would deal with that.
And I think the problem is that you can't take something that means so much to people and just take it away and say, oh, that's not real. That doesn't count anymore. Because even though the expanded universe isn't canon per se, it's canon in its own way. There's an expanded universe canon. There's the George Lucas canon, then there's the expanded universe canon. And if someone were to say, oh, that doesn't mean as much anymore, we're going to do other things, that would bother people. That's, by the way, why things that happen in the Star Wars Special Edition films were such an issue. But that's for our next show. Our next email from A.E. Willing seems to be more in line with kind of some of the things that used to bother me. He talks about the first time we saw A New Hope. He remembers seeing Darth Vader on a Saturday morning cartoon special. And then there came the dark times. We had the newspaper comic strips and the Marvel comics, and I devoured what I could get a hold of. He said to him, they were unattached stories, and not really a part of the story we were introduced to. Even the Alan Dean Foster novel, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, seemed too unbelievable to me. Then he goes down into the Zahn novels, and he talks about he felt stunned. Aliens from outside the known Star Wars galaxy, clone of a former Jedi Master from the Clone Wars era, I just couldn't latch on to it. Lots of EU stories in between, but to him, he says a lot of it is unpurchasable. And he says his first greatest letdown was Kevin J. Anderson's Jedi Academy books. Really killed it for me. They were awful. As years went, books and novels came out and grew the timeline past Return of the Jedi. I read virtually none of it, save for a piece or two that may have had a relation to something. Now we're going to 130 years past Return of the Jedi. This was George Lucas' story, and what's become of it? So he basically says, maybe he's too picky, but the EU ain't for him. What do you think about that?
I think that's his opinion to make, you know. None of us can really argue with him about it, because he doesn't like it, he doesn't like it. That's his opinion, and he's entitled to it. Doesn't offend me at all.
I think what you're saying, kind of, too, is like it's nice to be able to hate it. You know, it's okay to, if that's the way you want to take it, and that's the way you want to, you know, you just want to stay away from it and not read anything. I think that's okay. I think the fans are all different. We're very picky, I guess.
Agreed.
So
we are, and that's good. I mean, and I'm not, and I'm sure you're talking about me, but I'm not offended by it. But that's the thing: when you put the word Star Wars in that font on the cover of a book, you have a certain expectation when you open up that book that you're going to be transported to that galaxy far, far away and get those feelings and emotions. And I think for me, a lot of the EU that I've noticed that I like occurs during the prequel era, ironically enough, because I have a harder time with what Luke and Han and Leia are doing later. It's not like I can't extrapolate my imagination to see that, but it's hard to nail down characters that we kind of in our own minds have made our own, right or wrong, and we've decided what they can and can't do. Again, that's probably not the right way to do it, but we're very possessive of our franchise.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. I've enjoyed more stuff, more of the prequel era, even before that.
Because you like that old Republic stuff.
Yeah, I do. I think it's really cool. I have not even played the video game, so I don't even know that storyline all that well. But I've joined the books so far. But like you said, it's nice. Like you said, okay, there's a standard there. When they put that stamp of Star Wars logo on the front, there is a standard there that they have to adhere to. And I think in some respect, it is kind of like Lucasfilm kind of dropped the ball a little bit, maybe.
Really?
And after all, yeah, you'd think if they were going to be like, okay, let's put some books out there, and we're not going to call them canon, we're just going to put them out there to sell, make money, and we don't really care about the characters and things, because obviously, like you said, Luke, Leia, and Han are the big three, and the first books that came out were about them and their continuing adventures. So if they're saying, well, that's not canon anymore just because, you know, Lucasfilm put it out, I mean, it is from Lucasfilm's, you know, they okayed it. They put that stamp on the front of the book. I just think they kind of would take some of the brunt of the anger and the...
Well, they did okay it, but they're still not saying that it's canon. I mean, they also okayed Darth Vader yo-yos, but they don't say that he goes around in the first the Star Destroyer with one.
That'd be pretty sweet, though.
Yeah, let's see. Then you're talking about Star Wars detours, then, probably, aren't you? Is that canon?
No, well, see, there again.
No, of course it's not.
No, it's not.
Just, it's
but
just fun. It's just fun. Hey, no one can say to you, your canon is wrong, unless, you know, it's more powerful and you have more gunpowder. Sorry, actually, that's canon with two ends. Thank you.
Boo.
Nice.
So anyway, you can take and pick what you want. Just don't try to tell me, no, actually, Luke Skywalker is married. Well, in the expanded universe, he's married, but last I saw, Luke Skywalker was looking at all of his friends, and he had just put his father on a funeral pyre a la a Viking ceremony, and the movie was over. So was Luke Skywalker married? I don't know. I haven't seen it on screen.
Now, I saw an article online about the new Rebels animated show coming up, and somebody had posted, you know, possible characters that could be in that show.
Oh, yeah. It's on our Facebook thing.
You're right. Right. Yeah, that's where I saw it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, you know, and they brought Mara Jade. And I was like, you know, if they put Mara Jade in the Rebel animated series, then will that make her canon as far as...
Well, yeah.
You know, yeah. So
that's also like when Luke's a lot younger too. They don't meet until after Return of the Jedi.
So is that the EU version of her, or is it the film version of her? You know, the canon version.
Well, if it's Rebels, I'm assuming it's going to be canon, even though George Lucas is retired, and that brings up a whole other quagmire, if you will. And there'll be some debate on that, but I'm assuming because it's a Lucasfilm production and it's on television, you know, that I'm assuming that it will be canon. So if Mara Jade is in fact in it, which story-wise doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but if she is in there, then that would be canon.
Does that trump her existing storyline?
If need be. Like, yeah. I said, it's the canvas is such that whatever they do in the movies or the TV shows, the animated series, that trumps whatever will come in books. Because the movies don't have to be, and the TV show don't have to be beholden to anything. They can be reverent to it, like Filoni was with the Clone Wars. There's a lot of expanded universe stuff in the Clone Wars as far as some characters and different references and planets and things. But basically, if it fits their story better, then they will go around the expanded universe to make it fit what they're trying to do. And then that becomes the new canon. It makes the expanded universe version of it moot.
That's interesting. Like you said, George Lucas has stepped away. And does he depict what's canon and what's not anymore? I mean, I'm sure he does.
Kyan, did you watch the Clone Wars? Have you watched any of those?
The first couple seasons.
And you really liked them, right?
Yeah, I like them.
Did you find a lot of problems with the expanded universe as far as it being contradicted in the Clone Wars?
Not what I could tell.
All right, well, that's good. Let's go on to our next email from Joe Taylor, our friend from GHG. And he has a really quick email. I'm going to kind of breeze through it here for you. He says, I feel EU is a part of the Star Wars canon. Even though George Lucas says that the books are not a part of his story, there's so much of the story that goes beyond the six movies. I feel it's important to find out some of the story, such as the history of the Sith, the rule of two, the history of the Jedi, and the story of Luke, Han, and Leia after Return of the Jedi, and the Solo children. Does the EU go too far? Absolutely. The New Jedi Order was about 10 to 15 novels too long, and both the Legacy of the Force and the Fate of the Jedi series could have been shorter by 1 to 2 books each. And that doesn't even begin to count all the comics and graphic novels. So, and that's Joe for you. He says, may the Force be with you, and the Force be with you, Joe. Guys, again, the whole idea of Joe is saying it's canon. And Kyan has said before, it's canon for him. But this is the thing I propose to you off the air, Corey. When it comes to taking something that is doctrine or fact, you can't just eliminate things that you like or don't like and say, no, this is fact. The guy who created it gets to decide that.
Right. It's difficult to say, yeah, I like this, I don't like that, because like you said, when you come down to it, you're going to have to go with what's true and what, you know, obviously what's canon. So, yeah, I see what you mean.
And we talked in our news segment that when we talked about the Clone Wars and the bonus content, there is going to be, whenever we get to see this, hopefully sooner rather than later, some scenes of Yoda going to the Sith Temple. So that would be pretty cool to see if we can get some canon in regards to that.
Okay, so in reference to Joe's email, I do agree that the EU can go too far in places. And in my opinion, I've only seen that happen in one area, and that is with the Clone Wars. With all tons of graphic novels, the tons of novels, movies, TV, video games, I mean, everything. I think they've done about as much as they can do in a 10-year period of time. And I think it's time to move on to a different era.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So now you're saying you don't mind if the EU is rebooted?
No, a different era of the universe.
Oh, okay.
Not, yeah.
Sure. That makes sense.
Hence the Rebels. Exactly. Animated series. So.
Right.
That makes sense. Well, Chad, one of our loyal listeners and emailers, Chad lets us know that he thinks we have a great podcast and he enjoys our discussions and viewpoints that we and the listeners have. And then he talks about the steak and potatoes of his email. He says that he has little comfort in the EU. He also says he takes his coffee on the dark side and would only say that the EU book that he really enjoyed was the Dark Empire comics from Dark Horse. How apropos that would come on, more on that later. Most of the other EU items that come after, such as the Thrawn trilogy and the New Jedi Order books, never really did it for me. He did enjoy the Dark Plagueis book and Shadows of the Empire, but that's because they had direct relations to the saga during known time periods. And then he says, he makes a correlation here. He says, continuity is more important than canon. Lucas says retconned and adjusted the story so much, he brought back Darth Maul. To me, bringing back a character that was killed off in decisive fashion and not having it further the saga was a waste. I'd rather have Lucas and company spend time enlightening us about Darth Tyrannus and Sidious and what the plan behind the wars and their master apprentice struggles might have been. The continuity really has to be ironed out, in my opinion, before they progress with Rebels and the new movies. Now, this is ironic, by the way, because there are rumors going on. And again, we keep saying we're not a rumor podcast, and we are not. We are not changing our canon.
Nice.
But there's a rumor that Ian McDiarmid may come back as the Emperor. And he mentions the fact that they brought back Darth Maul. Personally, when they brought back Darth Maul, I thought he was a much more effective, intriguing character in the Clone Wars. In Episode 1, he's just a blunt instrument with a really cool lightsaber and some sweet kung fu moves. So they made him more interesting. But as a rule, when a character dies, to hold up to the narrative and the power of the narrative, I think they need to stay dead. What do you guys think?
I think if, especially in the case of Darth Maul, if he was killed off in, you know, that kind of manner, like chopped in half and fell down this huge hole. I mean, I know they've got cybernetics out the wazoo in the Star Wars universe, but I think that he was definitely dead. And honestly, in my opinion, I think if somebody is dead, like really dead, then I think they should keep them dead.
But when Darth Maul comes back, it's because of the Sith, the power of the Sith, and this they can't.
I haven't got that far in the series either. Okay. So,
well, I mean, they for people who have read it, seen it before, they know why Darth Maul comes back. And I guess I won't spoil it for people who haven't seen it. It makes sense in the context of the idea of the Sith. I'll just say that. So it actually works, even though I wasn't crazy about it. I'm definitely not crazy about the whole Boba Fett thing either. There's those three books, that three book trilogy where Boba Fett comes back, and I did enjoy those books quite a bit. But people got so upset that Boba Fett was dead in the way that he died. I thought it was appropriate in the context of the film because he's so high and mighty. And Han Solo, Boba Fett, where famously knocks him into the Sarlacc pit, is poetic justice. So to me, and if there is a standalone film with Boba Fett and he crawls out of the maw of the Sarlacc pit, he's alive. But otherwise, he's dead, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's the story that George Lucas told.
Going a little bit off topic here, I hope you don't mind. But interesting fun fact about how Darth Maul died while we're on that. I don't know how canon this is, but I have a book called The Jedi Path, and it's kind of like a Jedi like manual book type thing. And it was talking about current, like if you had a lightsaber and you were like it was talking about there's like 7 or 8 different ways to like chop off a limb off of somebody. That is outlined, and he did it across the waist like that. How Obi-Wan is supposedly it's held as like the most inhumane and grotesque way to – I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
So basically what you're saying, you know, if that strike is done correctly, as Obi-Wan did, and it's a fatal blow.
Well, he cut the guy in half.
Right. I mean, I mean, literally.
But again, if you guys want me to spoil it for you, it'll make sense when you see it. It's very, very smart, very clever. Gives a lot of insights into the whole Sith philosophy and mentality and their fear, I will call it fear, of the afterlife. It's like having a hard time letting go of your humanity, which of course the Sith, and we talked about this in our show about attachments, the Sith want to be more than human and make themselves kind of in league with the devil as far as their acceptance of the afterlife, in my opinion.
Right.
Yeah, I know those who've read the Darth Plagueis book, basically that's the core premise of it, is extending their life to beyond, you know, humanity, what it is. And, yeah. And that's, like you said, that's the way of the Sith life, you know, just basically prolonging their life until forever, I guess. So.
Right, exactly. Well, Becca weighs in. Becca Benjamin, another one of our very loyal listeners, she basically says that for her, the novel that stands out the most is Tatooine Ghost by Troy Denning, which takes place before the events of Heir to the Empire. It was known as the first expanded universe novel to bridge the gap between the prequel and original trilogy characters. It goes right into the characters, giving them such personality and depth, it almost spills out of the pages. This book connects the dots, so to speak, on Leia to Shmi and both to Anakin. Leia's so-called strength on the emotional level, the one trait that Luke points out during Return of the Jedi on the Ewok Bridge, starts to crumble as she learns of Vader's past as young Anakin Skywalker. Even Han is written in a way where he openly relates to some of Anakin's past actions, choices, and it doesn't go over too well with Leia. Now, as far as the topic of canon in the Star Wars universe is important, and she does feel, Becca that is, that for the most part, it's canon. All that I have read thus far, and that I have not, it seems to connect the dots, or rather the stars, to our universe nicely. Meaning the timelines have been drawn out for us and it makes sense. The authors and Lucas himself have really put a lot of thought and time into it all for us all to enjoy or delve even further into the realms of Star Wars. So yes, I take the canon notion very seriously in that regard. Not probably as much as others, since I haven't read all of them, but I do respect it and have never dissed the EU in any way. To be honest, the newest reads and those most recent seem to get better and better. Look at Plagueis the Wise. Thank you, Becca, for that. May the Force be with you. Plagueis is the book that everyone talks about. And I can't remember if I mentioned this before in our discussion or not, but when on the Force cast, I believe it was Rebel Force Radio, they interviewed one of the editors-in-chiefs at Delroy, and he said that Plagueis the Wise was canon. Now, was it? I haven't heard. If George Lucas says it to me, then that sinks it for me. It's really, again, the whole comic book thing about there's George Lucas canon, then there's Expanding Universe canon, then there's the canon that we kind of cut and paste.
Right, and we mentioned before is George Lucas steps away from the franchise a little bit. You know, what if he comes back and, you know, 5 years and says, oh, yeah, the EU is, all that stuff is, you know, canon now. Obviously, right now, what he says is canon and will be canon as far as the films go. But if he steps out and says, oh, yeah, all the EU stuff that was written is now canon, you know, where does his perspective fit in now that we're moving forward?
Kyan, you want to take that one?
I've never thought of that.
Neither have I. I just came to my head just right now. So
that's an interesting question, because now that he's retiring, yeah, he's the creator, but he's not like fully in charge anymore.
Right.
So
think probably, maybe, about where, maybe it's Kathleen Kennedy or J.J. Abrams possibly. I mean,
it's got to be Kathleen or Pablo, and they're going to sure, probably and address that at some point, I'm sure. I hope so, because that I mean, he wrote the outlines for 7, 8, and 9. I'm assuming he had something to do with the standalone films, whatever they may be. We'll see. Our next email, we have two emails that have come recently before our, I guess it's fortuitous that our we had so many Skype issues this week, because we were able to get some more emails from people. And we had Aaron Harris email us. Aaron, another loyal listener. Real quickly, he says that he loved our interview with Ian Desher, and he said, with you, Corey, being a writer, and you, Dan, as an educator, I can't think of two better people to interview him and get to the meat of the issues of a book like his. I did take the liberty of picking it up after hearing the interview, and we'll be starting it soon. Well, thank you for that, Aaron. As a side note, we appreciate that, and I think you'll love the book. Now, here's what he says about the expanding universe in canon. He talks about his background in Star Wars and his love of the films. It says, Our vision of Star Wars, when he was in South America, he was handed a copy of Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn, and he says he fell in love. I'm going to go on and just say what he has written. At that point, I was hooked again. I read through Zahn's Thrawn trilogy, Kevin Anderson's Jedi Academy trilogy, and more. As much as I love those books, and they continue the story I love so much, in my eyes, they were kids on the playground acting out how they believe the saga should proceed. One thing I have always loved about Star Wars was Grandmaster George Lucas. He always let people play in his universe, and he kept it orderly. The Expanded Universe books mesh in the timeline well. They flow and are consistent with the story content, but in the end, they are not canon. Lucas even said that the books aren't the real story. Now, even though I believe this, I am still a huge EU fan. I just finished rereading the Thrawn trilogy, and I'm chomping at the bit for Kenobi. I love the books because they expand my mind and are so well written that I can sit back, close my eyes, and see the action in my head. But in the end, they aren't canon. Now, I know this will upset a lot of fans out there. I know there are some out there who live and die by the EU, but with Episode 7 coming out, they're now being handed the hard reality that the EU is not canon. If J.J. Abrams, Kathleen Kennedy, and others are smart, they'll go in the direction of George Lucas set before them, will have some kind of a nod to the EU out of respect. I'm not saying they should write in Jason Jaina or have Thrawn as the enemy, but a subtle nod, something that everyone will get, and as an EU fan, they will appreciate. So, and then I just want to point out this last thing he says. He says that Star Wars fans have needed the EU to keep fandom alive. But just like we all have our own little fan fiction in our head, some of us fans out there have been blessed enough to get it published. Doesn't make it canon, though. Canon still wouldn't be as popular if it wasn't for the EU. And he brings up a great point. The dark times for Star Wars, where there was nothing going on between Jedi and the Thrawn trilogy, the EU helped to keep Star Wars in the zeitgeist of popular culture, which I think, by the way, the Clone Wars did after Revenge of the Sith came.
I agree, Dan. That dark time, like you said, the EU did keep it alive. And I think we've mentioned before, too, it's like these books are best-selling books, and there's a huge fandom out there that are reading them. And they're continuing to, you know, hit bestsellers lists and get all these, you know, great awards and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, to kind of discount them as far as, you know, somewhat of a, you know, guide or like I said, playing in George Lucas's playground and using his characters, you know, they obviously have kept up fandom pretty well.
There is a big, big EU following. And, you know, like we were saying with Disney thinking of resetting the EU, you know, if they were to just like shut down and say, no, none of this counts anymore, I think they're going to get a massive rebound from all these fans of the EU because all of it's just going to be gone all of a sudden.
And again, that they just can't, you just can't say to someone, everything you knew and grew up with doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
They just can't do that. And if they do, they'll make an alternate and yet another timeline. That's fine. Again, Star Trek, J.J. Abrams did that perfectly because he took the existing Star Wars canon, he made a reboot canon, but he had them coincide with one another based on the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek film. That was genius. That was the way to do it. And I'm guessing that would be something they will do with the expanded universe if they do in fact reboot it, which we don't even know that they are. That's just another thing that people are concerned with. I do want to point out that I like that he talks about canon not being as popular if it wasn't for the EU. What do you think about that? Because to me, canon is canon because people care about, they want their mythology. They want to have some sort of a direction to point their mythology in. And again, if you're having these debates or discussions about different Star Wars characters, you need to have a source. If you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. So you have to have some sort of a place to do it. And I think Aaron sounds like he's pretty much in the same camp as we are. Again, people, we're not saying the EU doesn't matter or doesn't count. It matters in the context of itself. It just doesn't trump the movies. That's all we're saying.
All right. It's what's nice, too, is to get people's perspectives on that, too, and how they feel about it and things like that. Like we said, you know, who better to take on these next films than kind of the master of franchises and making things kind of, you know, okay for the fans to hop on board is, you know, J.J. Abrams. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
To his email when he was saying, I don't know if I agree that the canon is popular because of the EU, like he stated, but I don't think it would be as popular as it would be without the EU. Like, it definitely helps with popularity, but I don't think the cause is the EU.
And probably a lot of people, there may be a lot of people who don't care about
because
Tanner.
When you look at, and yeah, you know, there's got to be some people that don't care at all about it. And when you look at it, you know, in 1977, when it first came out, there was no EU. And look how popular it was then.
Right.
You know, there was tons of people lining up at theaters to see these movies.
Would you guys say that the percentage of fandom that are more pro-EU is bigger than non- or anti-EU folks? What do you think the percentage is there? Is it like it's more or less?
Well, if we, I mean, this it's way, 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 way too small of a sample size, but based on the responses we're getting on our Facebook and Twitter feeds and through our emails, it looks like the EU is appreciated and beloved, but canon still trumps everything.
Sure.
And again, this is a very small sample size.
Right. And like you said, Kyan, you know, if they were to get, you know, get rid of the EU as it is now and, you know, reboot that, there would be some uprising. There was, I mean, not that I would be totally angry with it and hate Lucasfilm for doing it, but I would be a little like, hey, you know, we do like what we have.
Would you riot? You know, would you go on night fires? Smash cars?
No, probably not. Would. Oh, you would. Would you write an angry letter to Lucasfilm?
Yes, I would probably do
that. Scathing. Again, they can't take away, like, there's Earth 1 and Earth 2 in the DC universe. That's the best thing to go back to.
Sure.
You can't take away your memories. No, they can say it doesn't matter anymore, but nothing's going to stop you from picking that book up off the shelf and losing yourself in that world.
Exactly.
No one can tell you. No one can tell you what to like or how to like it. But the people who create it, they can say, "No, this is more my vision." There's one more email we want to get to. Before we get to that, Aaron does say he was driving home from work and he almost wrecked his car when he was listening to show number 4. And we call out his iTunes screen name as winning the T-shirt. Can't wait to get it. I'll wear it proudly. And Aaron, thank you for saying that. Melinda had emailed me and asked us about the shirts. So the shirts are still something that we're going to order. We've been a little busy with summer and children and writing PCs and all kinds of stuff. But we are going to get to ordering those shirts. And again, if you want one, you better email us quickly with your size and your address so we can get those out to you. Our last email is a very quick one from Dwayne Smith, a new listener of ours. And he says, "Hi, guys. Here's my take on the EU and canon of Star Wars. Changing things up within the Star Wars universe really does not affect my fandom too much. Star Wars is a big universe. So big, I believe, the individual fan has the right to pick and choose what they believe to be their canon. So the books don't line up congruently with the films? Well, not even the films line up with the films. I mean, who shot first? That and many more debatable questions can be answered by the individual fan by what fits best with how they choose to enjoy Star Wars, irregardless of the medium they come from. To me, Star Wars is like a huge buffet table of cookie goodies. Cool goodies, I'm sorry. Grab a plate and pile in everything you like, and if by chance you get something that turns your stomach, don't worry about it. Put it aside and go get more of the good stuff that satisfies your appetite. Star Wars is going to be around for a long, long time. The story and all its variations will no doubt continue to move forward and branch outward in many different mediums. There's plenty to look forward to and to enjoy. Thanks, Dwayne Smith." Well, thank you, Dwayne, for your email. We're so glad you're a part of the show. I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with my friend Dwayne here. You can pick and choose what you enjoy, and maybe that's what he's saying too. You can pick and choose what you enjoy. The Who Shot It First thing is a perfect example of what he's talking about. But ultimately, we've said this 1,000 times, check the tape. Pablo Hidalgo and George Lucas say, this is canon, so you can't change that. You don't have to like it. That doesn't mean a fact is a fact. John Adams said facts are stubborn things, and it's a fact.
I agree with that because, you know, when it comes down to it, what's canon is canon, whether we like it or not. And we can't really change that fact, but we still can enjoy what we like. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Of course. I'm in the middle of reading Razor's Edge right now, and it's not technically canon, but it sure feels close. It's still pretty cool. Yeah. So why don't we, those are the last of our emails. It'd be interesting. Again, folks, continue the conversation. If you're one of the people that wrote in your emails and maybe you didn't feel like we covered enough of what you wanted to say, go ahead on to our www.coffeewithkenobi.com page and go ahead and click on the comments section and post your email or add a new thoughts. Let's continue the conversation because these are the kind of things we love to debate and kind of spin our wheels with and kind of see what we get to. But gentlemen, let's go ahead and get our final thoughts on canon, the expanding universe. It sounds like we pretty much agree. But Corey, why don't you go ahead and start?
Sure. I believe, like we talked about, the films are canon. There's the EU universe that are, you know, fun to enjoy and fun to get into and just lose yourself into. We said before, too, is like if you're going to defend your fandom as far as Star Wars goes, you're going to jump to the films because we know that's what's what. And we know exactly what, you know, that's for truth. And that's the first thing we're going to go to.
Kai, and your final thoughts for us.
Again, like we talked about, the films are canon. What George Lucas and Lucasfilms has said is canon is canon. I greatly enjoy the EU. If I'm thinking about, you know, how would this person react to whatever situation, like you'd mentioned several times before. Personally, I'm going to look at the films and what I've read in the EU. I'm going to kind of formulate an opinion after looking around at all of the things. And then that overall opinion will be my opinion of that character or that event or, you know, whatever, until something canon comes along to contradict that.
That's beautifully said.
Nicely said.
Yeah, and to me, it's the same thing. These books, they add to the tapestry of Star Wars. They weave a beautiful narrative that strengthens these characters, flesh them out for us, and sometimes connect the dots with what our imagination tells us, and sometimes takes it in a new, exciting, challenging way that may challenge our opinions and our interpretations of the characters. Again, ultimately, George Lucas and his canon, that trumps everything. Then you have your expanded universe. That is canon in its own little universe. And then we have fan fiction and other things that are also beautiful and very powerful and important too. Again, we're not telling you which is better than the other. No one can tell you that. It's up to you. The only thing that can't be debated is what is canon. And that's the films. All right, Kyan. As you know, as you were aware, we have five questions that we always ask our guests when they come on to have a cup of coffee with us.
Yes.
And we have five questions for you that we're going to hit your way. So, Corey, why don't you fire away with the first one?
Sure. What's your favorite Star Wars movie?
That would be Revenge of the Sith.
Our first prequel choice. Exciting. And tell us why real quickly.
Part of it's probably my age. You know, I grew up with the prequels. I wasn't here for the original trilogy. And then it's also out of the prequels. I think it is the best one. It's just, it's very, very dramatic. It's a very emotional story. I could really get into it. There's some really good action, especially lightsaber duel at the end. Oh my God, that was epic. I loved it overall.
Who is your favorite character in the Star Wars universe? And you can pick the expanded universe character, but we need a movie character too, of course.
All right. Well, for the movies, it would have to be General Grievous because he's just that awesome. And right, so for the EU, it'd have to be Darth Bane because, you know, rose up through the ranks kind of in the background a little bit. And he realized that how they were practicing, they ended up fighting themselves more than the Jedi, which he recognized as a problem. So he kept gaining power and eventually utterly wiped out the entire Sith order and started fresh. He came up with the rule of two that you've mentioned through a couple of the emails, and he formed the Sith that we see in the films. And, you know, I just find that really fascinating.
Yeah, that's definitely something that needs to be in my short list of expanding universe reads.
Okay, Kyan, your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
That'd be in Revenge of the Sith. We know, obviously, that this is the movie where Anakin makes the fall and becomes Darth Vader. And as I said before, it was a very, very dramatic movie. I think it kind of built up to this moment where he was talking to Palpatine, who we know is Sidious, and he was having these visions of how Padme was going to die. And he went to Palpatine, who was his father figure, looking for help and advice on how to deal with this. And Palpatine was talking about how there was a method of, you know, bringing someone back to life or extending their life that he had Darth Plagueis, which we've also met. And, you know, Anakin said, how do I do this? And Palpatine said, or he's like, where do I learn this from? And Palpatine said, not from a Jedi. That line just kind of sent shivers up my spine.
It's basically when he's saying, check.
Yeah, I have you now.
Oh, nice.
To bring an original trilogy quote.
Oh, boy. So if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
I don't actually collect any collectibles, but as we know, I do have a lot of the novels. My favorite is, again, the Darth Bane trilogy, specifically the first one. You know, I just can't seem to put them down. Drew Karpyshyn does an amazing job writing them.
Okay, last question. What particular message or theme about Star Wars do you that resonates with you or speaks to you?
Seemingly the biggest one that I see in the entire saga is redemption. You know, it seems that, you know, the story follows Anakin and his fall to the dark side and then ultimately his redemption at the very end. And, you know, Darth Vader was one of the most hideous Sith Lords, the most inhumane, savage Sith Lords out there. You know, he was, you know, for the exception of Palpatine, maybe he was about as worse as they come. So it showed that, you know, no matter how bad you screw up, no matter what you do, you can redeem yourself.
Excellent answers. It was great conversing with you about the expanding universe and canon. As I knew it would happen, you brought a lot to our conversation. We thank you for being on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me. It was lots of fun.
Thanks, Kai. Appreciate it a lot. See you later.
See
you.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too. See you later.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Our topic for show number 6 is Star Wars Special Edition. The pros, the cons, the right to change work of art. Whose work is it? Lucas's? The fans?
And we know that this is a very old topic, but we never got a chance to discuss this on Coffee with Kenobi. It was brought up recently on the Forcecast, and a very good friend of the show, Ed Dalsta from the IndieCast, has a very strong opinion on this, and we're going to have him on the show to discuss the Special Edition.
I think, Dan, this is an ongoing discussion as far as fandom goes. I would love to hear what other people have to think. Go ahead and write in with your comments, what you like, what you didn't like, and we'll discuss it here on show number 6.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Hanno, buddy, you read me?
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
Our first email comes from Shane Greer. He says, "Hey Z and C, they're dropping you a thank you for the podcast. I listen to the Forcecast and Rebel Force Radio, and you guys are quickly catching those guys in quality in every way. Keep it up, guys. Thanks, Shane Greer." Well, Shane, we're obviously ecstatic about your email here.
Now, that was really nice. That was cool. I mean, the Forcecast, Rebel Force Radio, and I would include Full of Sith on this list. They're the gold standard, so I hope someday we'll be on that level. That would be great. So this was a really nice pickup for our day when we saw that. Thank you very much, Shane. Our second email is from Gar Van Oden via Facebook, and he says, "I think the lead character of Star Wars 7 should be female. For the original Star Wars, GL considered having the lead to be a female or a little person, because then it would seem even harder for the lead to surpass all odds and save the galaxy. GL did the little person thing with Willow, and he did the male lead thing in Star Wars for 6 movies. Now it's time for a female lead. Star Wars is not about boys. Star Wars is about life. If someone thinks Star Wars is just for boys, then they must enjoy being called a 40-year-old virgin. Oh boy. To me, it would make sense to have the main character be either the daughter of Leia, or even better, the daughter of Luke, so that the 9 films can have 3 generations of Skywalkers. And everyone is assuming it's going to be somewhere from the EU. GL just married a black woman. What if we found out that Luke married a black woman in the story of 7, follows his daughter played by someone like Zoe Saldana? I think that would be awesome." Well, thank you, Gar, for that insight into Star Wars and females in the Star Wars universe. Clearly a reference to our show with Trisha, which we had a lot of good feedback on as well. And I do want to put a plug in for the latest Star Wars report that talks about the role of feminism in the Star Wars galaxy. Brian Young from Full Sith and Trisha's on it, and they have a nice little roundtable, so check that out as well. I don't know. I mean, Mara Jade isn't a black character. That would be fine with me. I don't care who Luke marries. As long as it's a good story, that's what matters to me.
I agree, and it's about the characters, like we said before, Dan, and to have female lead or a male lead, whatever it is, it doesn't make a difference to me as well. Female lead would be interesting. It would be make something a little different, you know, and having it be a Skywalker would be excellent as well. But whatever which way they go, I'm going to go with it and see what happens. And I think Gar's got some great insight here, and thanks for the email.
And, well, and real quick, too, I mean, clearly the next 3 movies are going to be about the Skywalkers. I mean, it's the Star Wars saga. You have to have the Skywalkers in there somewhere. And I agree with you. If it's a girl, that'd be awesome. It needs to be a good character. There are a lot of females that are excellent characters. That's what we want. Put in great characters, emphasize the story, have the characters grow and change, make us care about them. and then it's great.
Cool. Our next email comes from Dan. Comes from Dan Z. Comes from ourselves.
I was getting enough airtime, so I wanted to do that.
Yeah. Our next email comes from Sam Simulan, and he says, "Hi, Dan Z and Corey. I've been a listener from the IndieCast and heard from Dan Z's great emails to Ed. It is nice to hear about your endeavor with Coffee with Kenobi podcast, and I wish you continued success. I enjoy this podcast because it looks at aspects of Star Wars with an in-depth look at scholarly, literary focus. I find your discussions very refreshing and thought-provoking with your coffee shop format. Because of this, I have coffee talk suggestions for you. We all know George Lucas likes reoccurring elements in his saga. My suggestion is to identify the reoccurring elements in these films. Themes, characters, character roles, plot lines, locations, and dialogue. And discuss the probability and likelihood the theme will appear in the new upcoming trilogy. For example, R2 and 3PO have been in both previous trilogies. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan have both died similarly in the first part of the story. No, he says. Tatooine plays a nice role in both sagas and is home to a main character and lower class citizens, farm boy slash slave. The female protagonist is a member of royalty. Does Lando and Bail Organa serve as the same character? Both Luke and Anakin get a dark look into their future in part 2. Well, you get the point. Please note, I don't want to talk to be about wild random speculation or episode 7 or which trilogy is better. Given what we've seen so far, the talk should be centered around identifying similar landmarks. Given what we've seen so far, the talk should be centered around identifying similar landmarks in the saga and perhaps making an educated guess of a similar appearance in the new trilogy. To know your future, you must know your past," he quotes. Thanks for listening, and the best of luck with your podcast, Sam.
Well, Sam, thank you. I think it's very cool that you followed us over from the IndieCast. I've been following that show since it started and even got to be on the show, which was really fun, so I appreciate that. We hope to bring a similar intelligence to the show that the IndieCast features, and you have some great suggestions for reoccurring elements in the saga. Motifs, we would call them in the literary world, or different archetypes, if you will. And actually, and people have been doing this, but if you have ideas for suggestions or topics that you want us to discuss, or even if you want us to try to get people to be on the show to discuss with us, send us an email and let us know. We'll definitely put it into our list. We're getting quite a good list so far.
What a great topic for discussion. I love his ideas here. I also love the fact that he wants to keep it, centered around, obviously, not speculation so much into episode 7, but more of what could happen possibly. I think it will happen in episode 7 in the next trilogy. There's going to be overarching characters, theme elements, because that happens in all kinds of different storytelling aspects. Books, other movies, obviously. I think they'll try to stick close to that. But definitely this is something to talk about, and definitely something we can handle here at Coffee Kenobi.
Yeah, explore those parameters that make a strong literary story, a strong mythology. Don't get lazy and put in cliches like Pacific Rim. Feel free to, you should disagree with me on Pacific Rim. Go ahead, this is your chance.
Okay, Pacific Rim was not all that bad. Yes, it was cliched, but that's the way it wanted to be. He wanted to be cliche, he wanted to have...
He wanted to be lazy?
No, it wasn't lazy, but it wasn't. I mean, okay... Can you agree with me that it's one of the probably the most original ideas out there lately in Hollywood? Not most original, sorry, from like Godzilla, but giant robots fighting aliens that come from under the water.
Yeah, I mean, that's more original. That's never happened.
No, it's not Transformers.
Ugh. It is. It's so lazy. The characters.
It's almost, well,
no
it's
cares about them. Listen, you got to put your fanboy status aside, and this goes to everyone. Put your fanboy status aside and embrace the story for what it is. And I understand. Some people just want to see a movie and just be entertained. That's fine.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, that's fine. But people also want to eat candy, and that's full of sugar. So it might fill you up. It'll rot your teeth. This crap will rot your soul.
Okay, then let me ask you this then. What did you want? Some big philosophical storyline with these characters so in-depth, and we get a 7-hour-long movie talking about these giant robots and how they created, and these characters who love each other, and the discrepancy between, the son and the father.
I don't care if they love each other.
Well, but that's what you're going to get into, obviously, because it's the end of the world, and, Iris Elba had to cancel the apocalypse, man. He had to.
Well, I love him. He's great.
Oh, he was excellent.
The effects are fine. The problem is the whole thing is just, oh, here's CGI. Here's CGI. I never, some of the peril, I guess, was decent. J.J. Abrams and George McFly are the two scientists that are trying to help it out, and that's all fine. Whatever. And I don't have a problem with just fun pop culture eye candy. That's fine, too, but I want to think a little bit. Give me some themes here. What's the theme here? Look out for giant things that will step on you. Don't destroy the ozone. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the bulk of the audience would disagree with you, but they're going to move ahead and go ahead and make a sequel to the two of Pacific Rim, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Are they really? I thought it was not doing so well. I don't have that strong of an opinion on it. I just think it's fun to kind of stir the pot a little bit. So, thanks for indulging, everyone.
Well, not only that, we here on Coffee Club love to debate different aspects of fandom, whatever genre it may be. And Dan and I get along on, 99% of the topics, and we love to sit around and talk about this stuff. That's how the podcast actually started. So, more power to each of us and each of you to write in and with your ideas. So shoot away.
Our last email comes from Joe2D2, and he's a friend of ours from the GHG Geeks Helping Geeks. We have, by the way, had a lot of questions about what Geeks Helping Geeks is, and we're going to have a future show where we talk about that. But on to Joe's email. Hey guys, I've got a couple of interesting topics that would be fun. One would be a discussion on the friendships and relationships that have developed because of Star Wars. GHG is a great example. You could have a discussion on collecting and habits and tendencies, opening versus leaving packages sealed, other things like that. Another one is way for the future. At Celebration Anaheim, wouldn't it be cool to have a group broadcast discussing the celebration in Episode 7? Not sure how to accomplish that, but we have 18 plus months to figure it out. Looking forward to the discussions, Joe2D2. And Joe, absolutely. Corey and I have already been talking about this. Rebecca Benjamin and Brian Romersberger and everybody on our GHG site, we've been talking about doing a big Coffee with Kenobi thing at Celebration Anaheim. So, great idea. Love the suggestion.
And what a great suggestion, because, I mean, not only is it just our little group, but there's also a lot of different fandoms out there as far as Star Wars goes. There's a lot of different groups out there that love to find out new friendships and new relationships, especially to the conventions we've been talking about, especially through podcasts. I mean, look how friends you and I have made just during our podcast through their emails and just their little Twitter feeds and stuff like that. I know I just ordered an Ultra Saber, and they've got a forum out there with a bunch of different people on there, and it's a great group. And some have recognized me as far as doing Coffee with Kenobi, and I think it's great.
If you'd like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the comments section. If you enjoy the show, please write a review on iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also listen to the show on Stitcher.com. If you enjoyed the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Horrock on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 5 of Coffee with Kenobi. Thanks to everyone who contributed to this week's show, and to all of you out there who listened to our show. Don't forget to send us your comments and opinions on the topic for show number 6, the Coffee with Kenobi discussion regarding Star Wars, the special edition. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm LTD, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at StarWars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi, unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here. Move along.
Sweet pickles.